Dr. Luis Ferrandez from the University of Sydney, you're an expert on Latin American politics. What just happened in Colombia?
This is, I think, a very happy day for everyone around the world, but in particularly for Colombians. We should really congratulate them for having had the strength, all parties, to reach this agreement. And we can only hope, as Colombians have for many decades now, that this translates into a peaceful, really democratic cohabitance. I'm very, very hopeful that this will be the case. And I'm very, very happy for Colombian friends and in general people in the country.
This is a conflict that's been going on for 52 years. Why now?
So, as you noted, what we have witnessed recently is the outcome of a very long process of negotiations that started 4 years ago and that ended up bringing forth a peace agreement between the government of Colombia and one of its and one of Colombia's oldest and most important guerrillas, the FARC. They ratified this agreement on Monday last, but they had, of course, been setting grounds for the signature for, as we noted, several years. This needed to be, of course, brought back to the public of Colombia because negotiations and the initial agreements took place in Cuba, in Havana. And what we saw this week was really the staging of this very important and really historical agreement, which, of course, now faces all the challenges that it will produce in Colombian society. This needs to go as well through a national vote, and people will be as well, citizens in Colombia will be as well asked to ratify or oppose the agreement.
What are the odds on this referendum?
I think everything indicates that it's going to receive quite a strong support. A majority of the Colombian people certainly opposes the continuation of armed conflict, although there are differences in terms of what people interpret or how people interpret this agreement. There is, a more radical faction of anti-guerrilla groups that do not accept that this agreement brings, peaceful an equal treatment to a party that they didn't recognize as legitimate, and therefore they wouldn't condone what they consider to be unacceptable crimes.
Among these critics would be ex-president Alvaro Uribe, if I'm not mistaken.
You're actually right. But he's the leader of that movement.
He's basically saying that this is too mild, isn't he?
In short and plain terms, that is the idea, that the FARC shouldn't get away with this type of treatment.
What's his alternative?
Certainly to punish members of the FARC, and as well to, if a peace deal were to be achieved, it would be under the terms of not recognition of equality of parties between government and guerrillas.
The FARC has apologized to the people of Colombia. Uribe thinks this is much too mild. Do you think Colombians will agree with Uribe and say that they cannot forgive this scale of violence over 52 years?
No, I don't think that most Colombians will agree with Uribe, because they very well know the history in their country, and most people know that certainly the FARC committed really unacceptable crimes, but also know the history of crimes committed by, in some cases, sectors of the security forces in the country, as well as their collaboration with paramilitary groups. I think really peace and the search for democratic cohabitance really drives a majority of Colombians. So Uribe's position, I think, is really a minority one.
Can you talk about how this conflict started and how long it lasted and the scale of it all?
The scale is massive because it has had a really incredibly negative impact in Colombia in terms of basically the casualties that it has produced, directly more than probably 220,000 people died as a result of this conflict, but massive scale as well in terms of internal displacements of approximately, and these are estimates as well, more than 7 million people having to leave forcefully their houses and their dwellings in parts of Colombia, in some cases migrating to foreign countries. This all started more than 5 decades ago, And basically, it has to do with what some people interpreted in the country as a lack of will within the existing political structures in the 50s and early 60s to incorporate certain demands, demands advanced by popular classes and people who felt that, among other things, the distribution of land in the country and other aspects of political life were not giving them a response. There was as well the antecedent, I think, of the killing of a very important political leader, Eliezer Gaitán, is said sometimes as well as a milestone in 1948. He was assassinated and he was seen as a hope for the popular classes in the country, and his killing actually generated a lot of popular unrest as well as state repression. That led gradually as well to, and through different avenues, to basically the establishment of the guerrilla, the FARC, in the early 1960s. So it's more than five decades that this has been running.
What has been the role of the U.S. in this conflict? A lot of people are pointing fingers.
Well, there are certain indications that more or less directly, the U.S. has certainly played a role. And among other things, as probably you will know, they established the so-called Plan Colombia, which was an agreement between then-President Bill Clinton and in the U.S. and then-President Andrés Pastrana in Colombia to basically set a program of counter-narcotics, which eventually became as well intertwined with counter-insurgency in the country. A mass amount of money was transferred to Colombia, as well as training for military troops and so on in Colombia. Some people argue that part of this money was not really directly used for the initially set plans, and followed other avenues to establish links with paramilitary groups, and in that respect to as well continue to destabilize basically the politics of the country. Is of course not really the only actor, but certainly the intervention of U.S. In the region is not new. It has nearly two centuries of history now, and the country or certain groups within the U.S. have considered Latin America its backyard. So they intervened initially throughout the 20th century, primarily in political terms, supporting groups that they considered their allies in the anti-communist wars. But it seems to have translated as well in another form of intervention that addresses really the problem in Latin America in terms, for instance, of drug trafficking and production, but doesn't address what is really key to the problem, which is consumption and demand of drugs in the U.S.
In the U.S. consumes all the drugs that the FARC is selling, right?
Well, all of them, certainly not, but certainly the U.S. is the largest market of consumption of drugs, and among other other drugs, cocaine. Mm. So this has not been decreased, and certainly this maintains a problem that doesn't only have one focus of origin, which is in this case Colombia, but again, it's a problem that should be addressed in the States.
Why was this negotiated, this peace deal, in Cuba?
Well, as with many other aspects of politics, symbols are very important. And I think Cuba was seen in this case as a reasonable mediator. On the one hand, because of its position of independent sovereignty in Latin America, as seen as such by many actors in the country, not only the guerrillas, but other countries in the region, but as well because of the fact that it was certainly accepted on the one hand by the government of Colombia these days, in which as well Cuba has recovered its certain role of participation in hemispheric affairs, and as well accepted by, of course, the FARC group in this case, as a country in which guarantees for the security, among other things, would be granted. So in addition to those practical matters, I think the symbol is important, and recognition by both parties was essential in this choice.
As you know, this is SBS Norwegian, and my understanding is that Norway played a role in negotiating this as well.
It has, and a central one, as a guarantor of this agreement.
Mm. We're obviously very proud of that, and I remember we also played a role in negotiating between Israel and Palestine, and I'm wondering if we're considered an honest broker in conflicts like this?
Well, I think it demonstrates that Norway is considered as a potentially good mediator. I think you have mentioned another case in which as well the mediation of Norway was considered to be not only valid but as well useful as facilitator of the process. And in this case, it seems to have played as well an important role in to accompany this process. I think these are good signs in terms of the possibilities for future agreements, but it seems as well to respond to what is becoming a form of nationalist specialization of internationalism. Among other things, I mean, you will be very familiar with the so-called Oslo Forum, which has been established to promote this type of initiatives.
I think it's kind of becoming our brand for Norway, that we're all about adhering to international law and assisting other countries in conflicts like this. It's what power we have, I think.
Well, if that were to be the case, if it's a brand of mediating in conflicts, I think you should be very proud. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, I mean, there won't be many needs of mediating violent conflicts. But unfortunately, the reality tells us that there are still many situations in which mediation is necessary. If Oslo can provide support, I think you should be proud, and I think everyone should be happy with it.